A big part of Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker's sustainability initiative will come up Tuesday when the city council is set to debate a proposed anti-idling ordinance. Idling cars are just one of many factors contributing to the region's poor air quality, and Becker says if we want to be the country's most livable city, we've got to improve. On top of that, the city is keeping track of its carbon emissions and reporting the findings to the public. How far will this go toward solving the problem? Mayor Ralph Becker joins me in the studio to talk about that and other issues this morning as he makes his monthly visit. Mayor, good to talk to you once again.
Likewise, Jeff. Thank you.
So, Mayor, what are the specifics of this ordinance and what exactly would be prohibited in it?
Well, for some time, we've had in city policy for our city vehicles and city employees a no idling policy. And in fact, it's a 30-second rule. It says that if you're going to be idling for more than 30 seconds, turn your vehicle off. Of course, we have exceptions for emergency vehicles that need some extra power for things that they're doing. But it's worked well. We often have to remind our city employees of it. And it's one of those things that I think we all agree who follow a no idling policy ourselves individually, that once you make the change, you're very aware of it and you realize the benefits from it. And we've been looking for some time and have gone out to the public for input in quite a broad way about having a no idling policy in Salt Lake City. We decided 30 seconds might work for city government vehicles, but certainly our primary mission here is to make people aware of the effects of idling on our air quality, on their costs of owning and using a car, and on energy use and all the implications of that. So we have proposed, after a lot of debate back and forth within city government and with public input, on a proposed two-minute rule. That is, if you're going to be idling for more than 2 minutes, you'd be violating the ordinance, and built in a number of practical exceptions. But we just think it makes sense.
So if I'm stuck at a traffic light in the middle of the road, for example, sometimes, unfortunately, you are stuck in the same spot for more than 2 minutes. Will I have to turn off my engine, or is that kind of too
dangerous? And that's one of the exceptions that's built in, and as is true for existing city vehicles. Although I think about our longest signal is about 90 seconds, just so people know. And actually, I find that when I'm coming – I mean, this is just myself. I'm not trying to say this is what everybody should do, but when I'm coming up to a light and it's just changing red and I know it's going to be red for a minute or more, I'll just go ahead and turn off my vehicle. So the general rule, people go, oh, well, maybe this will hurt the operations and of your car and wear your starter engine out. The general rule actually is that 10 seconds is about the time where it is worth it from an energy cost effect on vehicle point of view. So we're hoping we can get a policy where people generally turn their vehicles off when they don't need to have them running.
Do you expect some people to argue that this, you know, goes too far in limiting personal freedoms and, you know, dictating what people can or can't do?
Certainly. And it's something, you know, that I'm certainly sensitive to, and I think most of us are. You know, we don't want to create burdensome regulations that don't serve a very important public purpose. And in this case, when we look at the quality of our air, the effect it has on health for people, particularly people who are sensitive to bad air, whether it's asthma or other reasons, and that there are people who literally cannot live in our valley, there are people who move out of our valley because mm-hmm. of the air quality, and the effect it has on economic development. I mean, just a couple weeks ago at the OR show, after our retailer shows, I was wandering around and talking to people. They love Salt Lake City. They're sometimes disgusted by our air quality. And we all feel that way, I think, to one extent or another. And so we need to be trying to do more.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're speaking this hour with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, stopping by in the studio for his monthly visit. So, Mayor Becker, the city is also tracking its carbon usage. How can you do that? How do you do that in an exact way?
Well, we can measure carbon emissions like we do all other kinds of air pollutants. We can look, and we've gone through a very detailed assessment over now a couple of years and been able to inventory in the use of our city facilities and our city fleet how much carbon dioxide we're emitting from our vehicles, What our usage of energy is and the sources of energy for our city buildings and how much that emits in carbon dioxide, which is the primary contributor, and methane coming out of our sewage treatment plants and our landfill, for example. So we've been able to make a complete assessment of our carbon emissions and to be able to measure how much we're reducing that. So if we're changing vehicles out, as we're doing now, to compressed natural gas from diesel, we know what those carbon emissions are, and we can measure that difference.
Have you noticed any measurable declines during your first term already, or have you just started this?
We have been converting our fleet over, for example, to hybrid vehicles, to alternative fuel vehicles. It is both saving the city a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in our fuel costs. And obviously, it's also reducing our emissions. It's reducing our energy costs, both financially and in terms of energy security and moving away from fossil fuels and the dependence that creates on foreign countries that aren't always friendly to our country.
Since there is no cap-and-trade system, Mayor Becker, on the federal or the state level right now, do you have any plans to sign Salt Lake City on to any kind of private cap-and-trade system on its own in the future?
Well, not cap-and-trade. We've actually gone beyond that. Salt Lake City, as have more than 1,000 cities across the country, have signed on to the Kyoto Protocol, which creates the goal of reducing our carbon footprint and our carbon emissions by so much. I think 15% by 2020 and up to 50% by 2050. We've actually created a more ambitious goal in Salt Lake City of 20% by 2020. So we're following what are international standards, as are most cities, and certainly I think all of the larger cities around the country.
So although you expect the city's green initiatives to save money, for example, compressed natural gas, obviously much cheaper than gasoline, I would imagine there's been a lot of upfront costs to bear taking these initial steps. How has the city been able to afford this during the downturn?
Well, there are a couple of things to take into account. First of all, our buildings, for example. When we build a building, it's not, you know, we'll take out a loan on our home for 20 years or 30 years for a mortgage. Well, when the city builds a building, it's not for usually 20 years. It's usually for 50 years and beyond. So we can take a long-term view of the return on investment. But even if we look at 20 years or even 10 years in many instances, the energy saving costs, dollar costs and otherwise, are very substantial. So, for example, with our CNG vehicles now, for our large fleet vehicles, we can calculate what our dollar savings are and what the payback is, which can be a couple of years. We also, though, have, fortunately, I think, thanks to programs that have been in place that may no longer be in place at the federal level, there's federal grants to help support that upfront cost. In the case of the CNG vehicles, it's a couple of hundred thousand dollars that are helping really bridge the upfront costs for us and allow us to just immediately start realizing the dollar savings as well as reduced air pollution and energy savings.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. We're live on the air with Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, and you can join us at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Well, Mayor Becker, you talked about building and capital projects, for example, the public safety building, and one thing that affects your ability to do those is the city's AAA bond rating, with Salt Lake City being one of the few municipalities in Utah that has such a bond rating. What's the situation right now with that in the wake of the federal downgrade by S&P?
Well, so far we're not feeling any effects. We're certainly nervous a bit about it, but we've got the highest bond rating you can get. We think we're continuing to both manage our money and our debt extremely well, and that there shouldn't be any reason for us to have any downgrading of our bonds. But when we see what happened in Congress over the last few months and them flittering around with making decisions that are simply practical decisions of government and governance, it has a trickle effect on down to state and local governments. And as were hundreds of cities across the country, we were notified that Congress's action may affect us at the local level. We obviously hope that isn't the case. We're not seeing any indication yet that it will be, but we're just paying attention at this point, and we're continuing to manage our finances well. We've got a good rainy day fund. We leave about a 10% cushion in our funding, for example, to make sure that we always have reserves that are necessary to pay our bonds, and we balance our budget every year. And so the city's in a very strong financial condition. We don't play games with our budget. We just try to – in fact, this last year we reduced our one-time expenditures so that we would be in an even stronger position going forward.
Salt Lake County is now looking at a $17 million budget shortfall even after cutting more than $100 million in recent years. You haven't passed a general property tax increase here in Salt Lake City even during this downturn. And, you know, West Valley City, for example, the second largest city in Utah, just passed a property tax hike. How have you been able to avoid this, and are you confident you'll be able to continue avoiding it during the next couple of years?
Well, I think, first of all, we have very tight operations in the city. And I've recognized that for a long time as an outsider looking at the city and who's worked with governments. We've been a well-managed city. But we've also dealt in a very forthright way with the downturn in the economy. When our revenues went down, we made major cuts in city government. And some of those were a little painful for people when we stopped mowing the grass as often and watering the grass as often and planting flowers. And we look for ways to achieve efficiencies. We eliminated one whole department in city government. Mm-hmm. So we've been taking measures as this economy has continued to falter to reflect the change. And it's enabled us, and by us I mean the city council and me working together, to be able to balance our budget without raising general revenue sources like the property tax. We've also made adjustments, though. We've done some increases here and there. We looked at, for example, how our permits and fee structure was set up compared to other cities in the valley, and where we were well below average, we raised some of those. So mm-hmm. But we've tried to be very sensitive, particularly to those who are on fixed income and lower income, not to add to the burden that's been happening with the general increase in taxes people have felt. I'm confident that we continue to do a very careful job of not only monitoring our expenditures but projecting conservatively what will happen in the future. Every indication is now we're on track this year. We're still pretty early in our budget year, which runs from July to June, but that we have gauged and projected well what the revenues for the city will be, and we don't anticipate a need to make further cuts this year. I say that with some hesitation because we're still early in the year. And certainly if there is a major recession, as some people are predicting, we go into a full double dip recession here, we're going to have to reevaluate and look at where we may need to make additional cuts in city in our city revenues. But I can tell you I have taken the position from the time I came into office that I do not want to raise our general taxes, property taxes, number one in those. And I remain committed to that. And so far we've been able to get through all of this without raising that tax burden. And the exception, of course, was the public safety building where people voted for the bond that increased property taxes.
Mm-hmm. Turning to a new topic, Mayor Becker, last time we had you on, we talked about the long-awaited Broadway-style theater project, the Utah Performance Center on Main, and your recent study indicating that there is such demand for a theater. But anyone who's seen this year's Saturday's Voyeur has experienced some of the skepticism about the project, and recent reporting by the Salt Lake Tribune indicates that there's not only a lot of skepticism from the arts community, but the county as well looks very hesitant to commit funding to the project. Have you hit a major roadblock in the Broadway-style theater?
I don't think so. You know, this has been a very challenging project to take on from the beginning, and it is for a variety of reasons. As we've talked about on this show, the first studies that were done about the feasibility and desirability of a larger downtown theater mm-hmm. was back in 1990. There have been three studies since then, and every one of those have said, you know something, this city is ready in many different ways to have a larger theater and will support it financially and in terms of audience participation. But when you look at all of the interests that would be concerned about a larger theater and pile those up, it creates not only a lot of skepticism but some opposition as well in the community. I share the skepticism. The last thing I want to see us do as a city is to put a major capital investment in place that operationally is going to drain the city or adversely affect other arts organizations. So the approach that we have taken with this theater is, first of all, is this something that is truly desirable and needed and will have the audience there? Is this a good thing for Salt Lake City economically? Is this a good thing in terms of broadening the horizons and venues for us in terms of providing performing arts? The conclusions, as has been the case in every study that's looked at this going back to 1990, is that Salt Lake City not only can support but with very little doubt will support this kind of a venue. And it's a unique venue. It's different than anything we have in place now. So certainly I think the conclusions are pretty well realized, except for those who have very good reasons to oppose a new theater. It's pretty well realized by those who look at this from a national perspective and Salt Lake City's individual market. And so then it becomes a question, is this something we really should invest in as a community? Because the capital costs are one thing. The operational costs are another. And having a self-sustaining operational expectation is something that we think can and should occur for a theater like this. But capital costs, anywhere you look around the country, and I think the exception is a place like New York, are generally covered by the public, or at least in part by the public. And that's the approach that we're taking on this. We've been in discussions ongoing with the county, both the county mayor and with members of the county council and others at the county. I think we're in agreement with the folks at the county who manage our cultural facilities downtown about what this will cost, what the economic effects are, what the financial effects are, not only from this theater in terms of operationally working, but also effects on other theaters, and how during a period of time of transition that can be handled with the revenues from this theater. But it's a question, you know, should the public support arts using public funding? We've made that decision in this community over and over again with ZAP taxes, with a track fund, as it's called, the county's source of funding for arts and zoos and cultural facilities and the convention center, that we will put public money into supporting our arts community. And this is one more approach to that, and it's being proposed in a way that will not adversely affect, in fact, we think will benefit the other arts communities. But there are a lot of skeptics out there, and I appreciate that, and I think our city council appreciates it as well. And so we've been moving slowly, conservatively, in making our judgments about how this theater would work. And we think it'll actually provide not only a great economic generator for the heart of downtown, but will also provide a new venue that will bring a lot more people into our cultural and performing arts scene and give us an opportunity to let them experience first-run Broadway, which we have not had here, and get them excited about attending a lot of our local arts venues as well.
Now, you were talking about the ZAP tax and current funding we have for the arts. I think a difference, though, is that, you know, right now those taxes go to support venues that house local theater companies that use local talent, local actors, keeping it all very local. And I think the question for many people is, should public dollars be used to fund a venue where, you know, you're going to be seeing Broadway productions with actors from New York City and Los Angeles and that sort of thing that could potentially drive, you know, companies like Plan B Theater or Slack or the shows up at Pioneer, you know, drive them out of business or at least hurt their attendance? How do you plan to address those very real concerns from the community there?
Well, first of all, we're not touching any of the revenues that are going towards publicly supporting those operations. They're great. I mean, I love going to Saturday's Voyeur, even when they're taking some pokes at me, and going up to Pioneer and going to Rose Wagner and all the various venues. And if I for a minute thought this was going to hurt those venues and those great productions, I wouldn't be supporting this theater. I think folks are saying, how can that happen? And the reason that I've come to understand is that we have different kinds of venues that support different kinds of productions. This was basically a touring house. And so we're not looking for any operational money. This is about the only kind of venue that pretty consistently, if it's well managed, and that's something we're paying a lot of attention to, if it's well managed, that actually produces revenue. We know when Wicked and Lion King comes here, they sell out like that.
Yeah,
I mean, it is there's a great appetite in this community, and that's not going to change. And we could actually do better financially and provide better productions with a new performing arts center that really is designed to be able to house those kinds of productions as well as others. There are a lot of musical acts that pass us up as well that's looking for this size theater for a musical production. It's not just touring Broadway. And really in recognition of the desire for some very special productions by the Utah Opera, the Utah Symphony, or the ballet, or other organizations, we're actually looking to build into this theater a better acoustical theater than would normally be the case so that we can house a greater variety of productions. So, you know, I certainly understand and accept the reluctance and skepticism of folks to support a theater like this. And if I wasn't convinced, and I think other people who are looking very closely at this, including the county officials responsible for arts productions in our downtown, that this could work financially, that this could work to broaden the base of our audience and increase audience participation in arts across the board, I wouldn't be supporting it and saying, let's do it. It also does a nice thing for us downtown. I mean, here we've got City Creek Center opening up next spring. We've got so much happening at Gallivan with the Twilight series over at Pioneer. Rose Wagner's doing well, and our other performing arts are doing well. But we kind of have this hole in the donut in downtown between 1st and 2nd South along Main. And bringing in a good activity generator like this theater at 2,500 seats, productions 150 days a year or more, is certainly going to help enliven this this part of downtown that needs a bit of a boost as well.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. And speaking, Mayor Becker, about, you know, boosting downtown, a couple of weeks ago we had on the program Frank Hugelmeyer, the president and CEO of the Outdoor Industry Association, which, of course, puts on the huge outdoor retailer show twice a year. He was very blunt in saying, you know, the Salt Palace is not expanding. We've got to look at our options for this show. And not only that, he's pretty frustrated by some of the actions of the state legislature and the governor when it comes to environmental issues and outdoors issues. How concerned are you about the city losing outdoor retailer?
Well, I'm very concerned. The Outdoor Retailers Show is the largest convention, if you want to call it that, exhibiting venue that we have coming to our state every year. It produces estimates of $40 million in direct revenues to our community every year and generates a lot of excitement. It also helps brand our community as an outdoors-oriented community. And it's not just backpackers and kayakers. When you go around that show, there's a lot of hunting, a lot of hunting stuff, and there's a spillover with a lot of related businesses and industries. And it is unlike almost anything else. There are exceptions in the energy, alternative energy field and others, but it is growing right through this recession at 10%+ a year. And a lot of the bigger companies are growing at 30%+ a year, right through the recession. So this is a business that is growing. We expanded the Salt Palace not that long ago, and yet they're already growing out of the Salt Palace, and this year they put up 100,000 square feet of tent space for them to add to it. If we're going to continue, there's no question if we're going to continue to have them here. And they could easily go to Vegas. They could Denver and Colorado have been actively soliciting them. They could go to some other cities that are larger and have more exhibit space. If we do not work hard to accommodate them, they will leave. And it is, as you mentioned, it is compounded by their sense that this state, certainly in the current administration, is not showing the warmth towards them, either from a policy point of view or in terms of personal invitation. Now, I know a lot of times that's often in the eyes of the beholder, and I've talked to the governor's office and the governor briefly about this, and I think there's going to be an attempt to remedy that. But this industry depends on having the public lands. It depends on having people have good access to the public lands and for the purposes that most of their equipment and apparel is used. And so they take a great interest in what the policies are of a city they're contributing to mightily in terms of financial resources, and they love coming here, in part because we have such great access to the outdoors. But we haven't always been very friendly to preserving and protecting the public lands in a way that they're interested from their business perspective. And I think they want to know that they have a good ear at the state. And that's something that at the moment I think needs to be remedied a bit, and hopefully it will. So it's a combination of things with this industry, as it is, I think, with almost every business. They've got a social value associated with their business, and they also have a real need. And I think if we, that is the city and the county and the state, come together and say, here's how mapping out, we think we can meet your needs over time, and make sure we're listening well and responding well to the concerns they bring from a policy point of view, I'm confident we'll be able to hold them. But if we don't, they will leave in a minute.
And one final topic this morning, Mayor Becker, our time is short. Earlier this week, the long-awaited new North Temple Viaduct reopened, so businesses on North Temple no longer have to worry about all that construction preventing customers from getting to their stores. What's the next step in redeveloping North Temple?
Well, first of all, construction is continuing on North Temple. We got the viaduct done well ahead of schedule.
Well, the first step, at least,
that's
out
right.
of the way.
But we're still there will be construction going on North Temple for the next – well, it's the scheduled time for completion of light rail is early 2013. So construction will continue along there. We hope people will continue to frequent the businesses on North Temple and take advantage of the viaduct being open. It certainly makes it a lot easier for a lot of us going east and west in Salt Lake City. Mm. The next steps are to complete the road as a complete street, that is with the tracks, with cars, with bike lanes, with off-street shared path, 10 feet for pedestrians and for cyclists as well, and an improved environment. But almost as importantly long-term is what we've done along that corridor from a land use point of view. We have changed our zoning there to allow for a full mix of uses, and in a transit – more transit-oriented street now with light rail running down it. That means residential, it means retail, and it means commercial along that street. And we've provided the ability now for people to easily do that. And over time, we're going to see that street redevelop in a way that I think will really be an exciting area in Salt Lake City and certainly representative of a larger street in Salt Lake City and what you can do along a larger road like that in Salt Lake City that both serves as a gateway into our community and a very active, vibrant part of our community as well.
How do you plan to deal with the fact that some business owners on North Temple have said, you know, they're not willing to pay for the improvements? Is that going to hurt the project?
Well, it's not hurting the basics of the project. We will still put in the street, and there a portion of the street agreed to an assessment that allows for improved lighting and landscaping along that street. A portion of the road from Redwood Road west, the property owners said, no, we were not willing to contribute as part of the investment and you know, from our perspective as a city, realize longer term those values. So not all of the improvements are going to be made west of Redwood Road because the property owners there didn't want to spend the money to do that. But we'll have the foundation of everything in place, and over time, I'm confident as folks see the improvements in the street, the improvements it makes for the community and reinvest, that as new property owners come in, those additional additions and enhancements will be made.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest has been Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker, stopping by our studios for his monthly visit. Mayor Becker, always good to talk to you, and we'll catch up with you in September or October.
Thank you. Likewise, Jeff.
We'll be right back.